Well, thank you, Mr. Klein, and good afternoon to everyone seated here and everyone watching online. Good to see all of you here. When Mr. Zutz was talking in his introduction, he talked about Spokesman Club, and that rang a bell with me because I hadn't been in church very long before people started approaching me and saying, you know, you should join Spokesman Club. And I had some excuse not to. And the next year, I had another excuse. The next year, I had another excuse. After 12 years, I ran out of excuses, so I finally joined. And I have to say that there were times when Spokesman Club night came up, and I just didn't feel like going. I had to force myself to go. But there was never a time afterwards when I wasn't glad that I went. They were always very enjoyable. And I think I learned a lot about from those meetings. I'm still a little, little nervous coming up here, but you'll just have to put up with it. So. Well, there's a book that's mentioned in the Bible that we know as the Book of Life. And it may be more meaningful to us if we think about it as a book of lives, because it contains the names of those who will enter God's kingdom at the time of judgment. And the title of this message is Written in the Book. And today I'd like to look at what the Bible tells us about this very important book. It's first referenced in the book of Exodus. If you'd like to turn to Exodus 32, Exodus 32, now, Moses had just come down from the mountain, and he'd found the people dancing around the golden calf. So he broke the stone tablets he had brought down. He destroyed the calf. He was just furious when he saw that. He destroyed it, and then he told the people, choose. Choose whether you're going to follow me and follow God, or you're going to go the way of the golden calf. And all those who were not with him, he had those who were with him kill the rest of them. If you look at Exodus 32 and verse 30, it says, now it came to pass on the next day that Moses said to the people, you have committed a great sin. So now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. Then Moses returned to the Lord and said, oh, these people have committed a great sin and have made for themselves a god of gold. Yet now, if you will, forgive their sin. But if not, I pray, blot me out of your book which you have written. And the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book. And skipping down to verse 35, so the Lord plagued the people because of what they did with the calf which Aaron had made. So we learn a couple of things about this book, which we know of as the Book of Life. There are actually four things that we can pick up from these scriptures. First of all, it's the fact that God does have a book of some kind, book of some type. The second thing is that this book contains some record about individuals, because God, Moses had asked him to blot his name out of there. The third thing is it's possible for individuals to be removed, or as it says, blotted out of the book. And the fourth thing, it's implied that those in the book are responsible for their own sins and not those of others. So God was not going to blot out Moses for the sin of his people. He would instead blot out the people and punish the people for their own sins. We're familiar with this book. We know it as the Book of Life. But let's look at what else the Bible actually says about it. If you turn to Psalm chapter 87, Psalm 87, verse We'll find out something else about the book. The heading in my Bible is The Glory of the City of God. His foundation is in the holy mountains. The Lord loves the gates of Zion. Let's go to verse 4. I will make mention of Rahab and Babylon to those who know me. Behold, O Philistia and Tyre with Ethiopia, this one was born there. Notice that he knows where people came from. And of Zion, it will be said, this one and that one were born in her. And the Most High himself shall establish her. The Lord will record when he registers the peoples, this one was born there. So we learn a couple more things about this book of life. First of all, God registers people in the books, in the book. And the second thing is he records where they were born, where they're from. And he seems to be gathering these names or grouping them by family or by nationality. And there are other examples in the Bible of this type of record, of lists of people. There are various genealogies that are recorded in the Bible. And the various census records in the Old Testament, we used to refer to them as the begats in the Old King James Version in Chronicles and Kings, where it would say so-and-so begat so-and-so, who begat so-and-so. It will list the genealogy of the people. And there are census records as well. Now, Malachi also talks about this book. And in Malachi, it's referred to as a book of remembrance. I'll read from Malachi 3, verses 16 through 18. Malachi 3, 16, the last part of the verse. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. They shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, on the day that I make them my jewels. And I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. Then you shall again discern between the righteous and the wicked, between one who serves God and one who does not serve him. So from here, we understand that not everyone is included in this book. We pick up a little more information about the contents. We find that the book is written for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. We find it's for the righteous and for those who serve God and not for the wicked or those who do not serve him. We also get a hint about the future purpose of this book. There will come a day when God will make them, the people in the book, he'll make them his jewels, it says. He'll spare them. They shall be mine. That's what he says about those people. So the time will come when a decision will be made between those who are in the book and those who are not. God even lets us know about some of the people who are in the book. David knew that his name was in there. And if you want to just write down Psalm 139, starting in verse 16, it says, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. So David knew that his name was in the book, and that there are some elements of his life that are recorded in there. There are other people who are specifically mentioned as being included in this book. In Philippians 4, verses 1 through 7, therefore, my beloved and longed for brethren, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, beloved. And in verse 2 of Philippians 4, he says, I implore Euodia and I implore Syntyche to be of the same mind in the Lord. And I urge you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. So Paul named some. He named Euodia and Syntyche and Clement, and he referred to all the rest of his fellow workers. You know, their names would be in the book of life as well. And we can also conclude that others were in there, the patriarchs, Noah, for example, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and those mentioned in Hebrews 11 would also be included in there, at least most likely they would. And many of the unnamed followers of Christ, those people who learned about Christ, who were baptized, who followed him to the best of their ability, they will be in there. But what about this part of blotting out? As we've seen earlier, people who turn away from God can be blotted out of the book. Now, David even prayed that his enemies would be blotted out. He does that in Psalm 69. If you just want to make note of Psalm 69, David is crying out to God. He is feeling a lot of trouble at this time. And in verse 17, he says, "And do not hide your face from your servant, for I am in trouble. Hear me speedily. Draw near to my soul and redeem it. Deliver me because of my enemies." At the end of verse 20, he says, "I looked for someone to take pity, but there was none." David felt he was all alone, that he didn't have any friends, only enemies. He said, "I looked for comforters, but I found none. They also gave me gall for my food, and for my thirst they gave me vinegar to drink." He goes on to talk about his enemies, what they had done to him, and how persecuted he felt by them. And in verse 28, he says, "Let them be blotted out of the book of the living and not be written with the righteous." So not only did David know that there was a book of life, that his name was in there, that the names of others were in there, but he knew that it was possible for them to be blotted out. And he actually asked that these people would be blotted out of there just because of the trouble that they were causing. And in, can't think of the word I'm looking for, but anyway, rather than asking for his life to be blotted out, he asks for his transgressions to be blotted out. And he talks about that in Psalm 51. In Psalm 51, he says, "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin." And I don't know if he was talking, just asking God to forgive him for his sin, or if he was actually asking God that if there were sins recorded about David in this book of life, that God would blot those sins out of that book. Either way, he was asking for God's forgiveness and he was repenting of his sins. Well, can we be assured that we will not be blotted out? We have some examples, or an example anyway, in the book of Revelation, verse 3. God is speaking to the seven churches. And in chapter 3, if I said verse 3 before, I meant chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse, we'll just start in verse 1 through 5. "And to the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things says he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works, that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God." So this is pretty strong criticism against this church. They're doing so much wrong. they think they're alive, but they're not. They're a dead church. But in verse 4, he says, you have a few names, even in Sardis, even among these people who he had nothing good to say about. You have a few names, even in Sardis, who have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He who overcomes, as long as we're overcoming, he won't blot our name out of there. So we pick up a few more things that the Bible tells us about this book of life. One is, those who have not defiled their garments are worthy and shall walk with Christ in white. It says they will be clothed in white garments. It says their names will not be blotted out of the book of life. And it also says that Christ will confess their names before the Father and his angels. So that's encouraging to know that there is a way, a path we can follow, that our names will remain in that book of life. Well, what happens then? What happens with this book, and when does it happen? We can pick up a general timeline, certainly not dates, but we can kind of get a chronology of what's going to happen. Starting in Revelation 13, it talks about the beast from the sea. And I'll turn there in my Bible. Revelation 13, starting in verse 1, the heading is the beast from the sea, or the beast out of the sea. Then I stood on the sand of sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. And he talks about this beast that had 7 heads and 10 horns and 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. And then he describes the beast as being like a leopard, with the feet of a bear, a mouth of a lion. He says the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? So this beast is going to be something great, and he's going to look wonderful. He's going to have power. He's going to have authority, and people are going to worship it. It says all the world marveled and followed the beast. And skipping down to the last part of verse 7, an authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. This beast is going to be all-powerful over all people. All who dwell on earth will worship him. Ah, but there's an exception there. All will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So those who are written in the book of life are going to know better. They're going to see beyond this false front that the beast portrays. And all the power and all the good, whatever miracles happen, they may seem for the good of mankind. They may be seen as our only hope, but they're not. Those written in the book of life will know better. And in chapter 17, verses 17 through 8, or 17, verses 7 through 8, and I'll just read the end of verse 8. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, again talking about the woman and the beast. Well, let me go back to verse 7. But the angel said to me, why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. So again, it says that all the world is going to marvel at this beast, except for those whose names are written in the book of life. In the book of Daniel, we learn that this book is going to be opened up. And it says in Daniel 7, verse 10, you don't need to turn there. It says, a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him, before Christ. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. That'd be 1,000,000. 10,000 times 10,000, or 100,000,000, stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. So this is the time of the end, and the books are going to be opened. We learn in Revelation 20 what's going to happen when these books are opened. Revelation chapter 20, starting in verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened, meaning the Bible. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his works. Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. In verse 15, and anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So these books are used for judgment, or will be used for judgment. A couple more things we pick up about the books. People will be judged by the things written in the books. And anyone not found in the book will be cast into the lake of fire. What about those who are in the book? Daniel tells about them in Daniel 12. He starts out, this is Daniel 12, he starts out to give a timeline. He says, there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. So this is at the time of the end. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So we find now that those written in the books shall be delivered. They'll be saved. And then what? We hear about a new city, a new Jerusalem. And this is talked about in Revelation 21. Revelation 21, starting in verse 22. Talking about the glory of New Jerusalem here, he says, but I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And in verse 6, or 26 rather, well, go to 24. And the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. Its gates shall not be shut at all by day. There shall be no night there. And then verse 26. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. But there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie. but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So here it comes again. And in Hebrews 12, it makes mentions of this. Hebrews 12, 22 through 24, if you just want to make note of that. Hebrews 12, 22, but you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven. So we learn that those who are in the book will enter the new Jerusalem. Those who have been registered in this book, they will be there. Now, what does this book look like? We don't know. If you look up, if you search for images of Bible Book of Life or Biblical Book of Life, you'll see all kinds of interpretations of what people think this might look like. Depending upon when people were born and when they lived, they might picture them as of stone tablets with something chiseled on them, or a scroll of some kind, wood or parchment, papyrus or paper. Papyrus scroll went as far back as 25 BC, so people in Egyptian times would have been familiar with that. And you'll see other kind of strange images if you try to find them. One I saw had a book opened with what looked like a DNA strand coming out of it, or you'll see with lightning bolts going into it. But the point is that we don't know what it's going to look like. It isn't physical necessarily, but people who see it will recognize it as being a book, and they will know what it is. How does it apply to us today? Well, according to the teachings of many religions or denominations, this is the only time of salvation. And anyone who has ever died without accepting Christ has missed out. That's too bad, but that's the way it happened. And so you see some denominations or some religions that will have extensive missionary works to go out and save those who have not heard of this because they feel it is their only chance. And you hear about deathbed confessions being enough to save a person, or infant baptisms, or baptisms for the dead. But we believe that everyone will be given their chance, be given a fair chance to hear about Christ and learn about Christ, and a chance to decide for themselves whether to follow Christ or not. Well, who is in it? We mentioned David, Euodias, Syntyche, Clement, Paul's fellow workers, those who fear the Lord and meditate on his name, those who haven't defiled their garments. And what is in it? Well, we read about names being in there, where people were born, where they're from, and their works. And we don't know how much detail. God, of course, knows all that. He doesn't need the detail. But he may want something that he can show to someone being judged, so he can say, see this, this, this. Because of those good works, you're going to be saved. Or because of these things that you just never repented of, you've had your chance. Well, what have we heard that the Bible tells us now, straight out of the Bible, about the Book of Life? And I'll just list them. These are the points I listed earlier, but they're all right in the scriptures. That God has a book of some type. This book contains some record about individuals. It's possible for individuals to be removed or blotted out from the book. It's implied that we're responsible for our own sins, because God wasn't going to blot out Moses for the sin of his people. We saw that God registers people in the book. He records where they were born, where they're from, and he seems to be gathering them by family or nationality. It's written for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. This book is for the righteous and those who serve God, and not the wicked or those who do not serve him. There will come a day when God will make those in the book his jewels. He will spare them. He says, they will be mine. They shall be mine. We saw that those who have not defiled their garments are worthy and shall walk with Christ in white. They will be clothed in white garments. Their names will not be blotted out of the book of life. Christ will confess their names before the Father and his angels. The book is opened or will be opened at the time of the end. People will be judged by the things written in the books. Anyone not found in the book will be cast into the lake of fire. Those written in the book shall be delivered, and those in the book will enter the New Jerusalem. And these aren't my ideas or my thoughts. Those are stated directly in the Bible. Well, why talk about it now? I know we're close to the holy days, but this message may seem more appropriate for the last great day. But symbolically, if we think about it, if people wait until the time of judgment to decide to follow Christ, to decide to make changes in their lives, and these books are opened, it's too late. So the time to think about it is before the time that that happens. You may consider the wise and the unwise virgins. I always want to say virgins when I say that, but the wise and unwise virgins. And what happened? It was too late for them to get oil for their lamps. Now Ezekiel talks about how fair God is. Ezekiel 33, in verses 12 through 20. I'll just read a few of the verses in there. Ezekiel 33, in verse 12. Therefore you, O son of man, say to the children of your people, the righteousness of the righteous man shall not deliver him in the day of his transgression. As for the wickedness of the wicked, he shall not fall because of it in the day that he turns from his wickedness, nor shall the righteous be able to live because of his righteousness in the day that he sins. And in verse 17, yet the children of your people say, the way of the Lord is not fair, but it is their way, which is not fair. When the righteous turns from his righteousness and commits iniquity, he shall die because of it. But when the wicked turns from his wickedness and does what is lawful and right, he shall live because of it. Yet you say, the way of the Lord is not fair. O house of Israel, I will judge every one of you according to his own ways. So God is saying that if we have sinned in the past, we can be forgiven for those. We can turn from that. And we can become righteous. But at the same time, we can't assume that just because we have been righteous, we want to turn the other way and follow this other pathway that just seems like it's more fun or something. You're saying, no, that your past righteousness won't save you. So people can change, and it's important for us to recognize that that change can go in either direction. Well, we'll find our names on many lists during our lifetimes. They're already on many lists. Lists of birth records, that's probably the first place we'll see it. They're on family tree lists or school class lists, dean's lists, graduation lists, census lists, employee lists, lists of various organizations we may belong to, and others, just to name all the government lists that we're on. I don't have time for that, but all of these are or can be important to ourselves or to others, but the most important list of all is that's contained in this wonderful book mentioned in the Bible, the Book of Life. And I'd like to end this with Christ's words in the book of Luke. In Luke chapter 10, in verse 1, it says, after these things, the Lord appointed 70 others also and sent them two by two before his face into every city and place where he himself was about to go. So God was sending his people out to spread the word, and he's giving them the power to heal, to spread the gospel, and to cast out demons. In verse 17, after these 70 come back, they're all excited. Luke 10:17, then the 70 returned with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. And he said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Behold, I give you the authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. But verse 20 says, nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. And those are his words to us today, too.